Just a quick stat we'll start with this. The EPA estimates that drinking water, wastewater combined accounts for about 2% of energy use in the U.S.
I am Reese Tisdale, and this is Future of Water, in which we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. This is episode 60, and as always, it's going to be a good one. I'm joined today by my colleague Amber Walsh to talk about municipal sustainability and growing number of cities implementing climate mitigation strategies that are not only impacting carbon emissions, but also they're influencing water management and water strategies at the municipal level, but also at the utility level, which, as many of you may or may not know, in the U.S., it's alone about 85% of water systems are publicly owned, meaning they're not owned by private companies, whether it be property developers or investor-owned utilities. So as a result of our interest not only in water, but also strategies and what's happening around the world, Amber has put together some analysis relatively recently of about 35 U.S. cities and then some that represent more than 41 million people. And she digs into what their climate action plans are. But before we jump into the conversation with Amber, I thought I'd raise a couple points of interest for any listeners out there. One, and we've shared this actually on our last podcast, capital improvement plans. Bluefield Research has just put together a deep dive analysis of capital improvement plans and the data, the bottom-up data, meaning project by project. I think according to Jaime Colon and our research team, we have analyzed, categorized, and illustrated or visualized on our data platform almost 40,000 projects and what that means for the water sector. So pretty significant data collection and scrubbing exercise that has taken place looking at utilities in every U.S. state as well as Canada and Canadian provinces, to be fair. So that definitely should be of interest. Also, be on the lookout for our upcoming and, I guess, albeit related, capital expenditure and operating expenditure forecast for the U.S. market. That's coming out in the next couple of weeks, which will be interesting. We've taken a look at the historical trend in spending, but also we've applied a couple different scenarios, you know, including things like inflation as well as recession and what it might or will mean for the water sector going forward. And then lastly, I thought I'd just throw out there that it's end of the year, so it's always worth reaching out to our team of water experts, as well as, not gonna lie, John Berryman, our sales director, who's always willing to help companies figure out what they're planning for in water for the upcoming year. So those are three little announcements worth jumping into. You can always sign up for Waterline. Our weekly newsletter goes out every Wednesday with some news headlines, events, and also just updates on Bluefield content. So take a look at that. You can just go to bluefieldresearch.com for any information on that. But rather than hear me blather on about the water sector and Bluefield Research, I thought I'd jump into the conversation with Amber. So let's get to it. All right. So I'm joined here by Amber Walsh, analyst of Bluefield Research. She focuses on industrial water activities almost exclusively. But I guess in this case, we're going to talk about something a little bit different, partly because she's been or has been pushed into a different direction when it comes to climate change, municipal sustainability, and such. But Amber, what's going on with you? Where are you these days?
Not too much is going on. I'm right outside of Boston. Yeah, just hanging out with the nice cold weather.
So like everybody else, so for the listeners, Amber and I get on, and I think it's genuine, you know, but on these podcasts, sometimes sports comes up. It comes up with Dave McGimsey on the Water Values podcast, which I do with him once a month, but also with others. Amber's a big Pats fan. So we start the day commiserating, at least Mondays, how good or bad the weekend was. So what's your, on a scale of 1 to 10, you can't use 7, Amber, what's your temperature check? on the Pats?
It's just up and down. I would say 5. We're in the middle here.
Okay.
Sometimes we're disappointed, and sometimes there's like a glimmer of hope.
All right. Well, if you're less than 7, and which you can't use, then you're pretty much in the dumper. So with that being said, let's talk a little bit about water. And like I said, you know, at the intro, you've recently released some research. You know, the report specifically is the water sector's carbon footprint, evaluating utility roles in municipal climate action plans. It's a mouthful, but there's some really interesting data and insights you put together there. So let's just talk a little bit about this. I mean, you look at the industrial water sector specifically, but how did this all start? How did we sort of get into this? Because it's not on the vendor side necessarily. Where did this begin?
Yeah, definitely. So this is a bit out of what I normally do, but we had a mission with the client. They're trying to develop a climate-related strategy targeting municipalities. So kind of based on this client conversation, I do have a personal interest in climate change and just the, as you'll see in the industrial side, the corporate sustainability stuff. So I kind of just started looking around, researching, and I did find some valuable information on what's going on related to climate mitigation strategies pertaining to the water space. So we see that these municipalities are increasingly compelled to reduce their carbon footprints. There's a host of factors that are driving this, from politics, economics, and like environmental concerns. And just from looking around, we see that there's such a difference in approaches, setting emission reduction targets, conservation measures, and improving efficiencies.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it is interesting. I mean, this is one of the challenges of the water sector. It's not, as a whole, it's not privatized, right? I mean, you know, we really look at, when we look at it, at least in the U.S. and really globally, you've got your publicly owned systems, of which there's a range, right? From small communities, towns, cities, to large, you know, urban areas like, you know, Los Angeles, right? LADWP. As well as things like Metropolitan Water District, which is a big bulk supplier to the Southern California region. But then you've got the private side, right? And so you've got the private players, and that could be a trailer park, a small community system, to American Water, the largest investor in utility in the U.S. But, you know, so you've really focused on really the larger cities, right? Because a lot of these public systems, under their purview, are the water and wastewater operations or services. So where does water and wastewater fall into the equation of emissions to sort of paint the picture? And does it represent, what kind of share does it represent of emissions? Is it significant? And so on.
Yeah, definitely. So just a quick stat, we'll start with this. The EPA estimates that drinking water, wastewater combined accounts for about 2% of energy use in the U.S. It does comprise a larger percentage of kind of the municipal energy budget, like 30% to 40%. And wastewater treatment in the U.S. is about, it's a little under 1% of national emissions. So this is a small piece of the pie, but it does provide an opportunity for energy improvements and emission reductions. And a key piece of this when we're looking at wastewater treatment is the emission of methane. So that's 25 times more potent in trapping heat compared to carbon dioxide. So as we're looking at climate change, global warming, methane's definitely an attractive opportunity to reduce or mitigate the climate change. So that's why there is this focus on the wastewater treatment plants.
I mean, hey, you know, we're coming up on the holiday season where we're all sitting around the dinner table in the U.S., Thanksgiving, but also the Christmas, New Year's holidays, and all the others, I guess, that go with it. And there's nothing more impressive to talk to your family about than wastewater emissions and methane. It's really exciting. They'll be really impressed with you.
I know my family loves when I bring it up.
So, no, but I think it is interesting. I think you kind of touched upon it in that, look, it looks like a small share of the pie, right? You know, if you're looking at 2% of energy use, but for municipal energy consumption, it's really high, right? And I think really maybe even more importantly, when you're talking about things like methane, there's an opportunity there for things like energy capture, et cetera, et cetera. So their efficiencies are to be gained or had to improve. I mean, you know, if there was one silver bullet, maybe the conversation about climate change would be a lot different, but it's not the case. It's going to take a portfolio of approaches. So let's sort of dig a little deeper into what you've been looking at. So you've looked at municipalities, like what have we looked at to kind of get a benchmark of what's happening in the U.S.?
Yeah, definitely. So we looked at 35 large U.S. cities that have these climate action plans. We looked at their greenhouse gas emissions, how they report, what are their targeted reductions, as well as their water management positions. So we do see that even just in reporting, there are lots of differences city to city. And we see that just throughout with strategies as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that was really one of the questions. I mean, it's part of the reason, like you said, when a client came to us asking about this, because they're trying to figure out one, not only their own strategy and is it a differentiator in their own strategy as they approach cities, you know, and partly is also when it comes to water, which cities or how many of these cities actually care about water. You know, this is a struggle, you know, while drought, hurricanes, blackouts, tornadoes, winter storms, it's all on the front pages of the news all the time. But these are sort of collateral impacts of climate change, of in water being a big part of that. So, you know, water, as we see, is finding its way into not only corporate sustainability plans, which I guess you also have research coming out on that pretty soon, but also municipalities as well. So why do you think that not all cities in the U.S. have, I guess we're starting a little bit with a negative, like why have some adopted climate action plans, whereas maybe the question is why have some not implemented them? What's the rub, so to speak?
Yeah, I think the large thing when we look at the difference between municipal and industrial is the municipal sector is constrained by like budget resources, as well as it's just slower moving. So we see that it will take longer for adoption of certain things, especially when there's the lack of pressure from regulations, there's a lack of incentives. And it does depend on like the size, the scope, boundaries, where you are. So there's a lot of different factors that go into it. It would be great if every city was required to do one of these, but we're just not there yet.
I think, you know, one thing that's interesting, energy prices are going through the roof this winter for not only heating oil, but also natural gas. One where they're just infrastructure constraints. I think even resource constraints is a big thing, like workforce shortages. There's just a lot of stress, not only financially on these cities and utilities, but also, you know, just time and staffing. Is there a difference in how cities approach the targets and timelines?
Yeah, definitely. So as I previously mentioned, there are huge discrepancies city to city, even in just how they report emissions. So how we tried to kind of look at and analyze how these cities are, what they're doing, we grouped it into six different categories for their like water specific emissions reduction strategies. Some of these programs include conservation initiatives, building requirements, increasing reuse. Those were the top three we found. However, we have stormwater management, biogas capture, and improving your energy efficiency of your water operations were the other ones. And the key takeaway, and a huge takeaway, I feel like, of the report is that there is this great variation in their approaches. Some cities, you look through their entire 200, 300 long plan, and they don't mention water once.
I assume you mean pages by that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. And you look through this and you don't see water. They just, it is a small portion of the pie. They're kind of focused on the bigger contributors, whereas others, they have whole chapters dedicated to their water related emission reduction strategies.
But I think that's a really important message, because I think part of the challenge that the water industry as a whole has is it's always focused on the water itself. But I think, and this will lead to my next question, it's really, should the conversation really be more about what's water or wastewater's role in energy usage and emissions, right? So with that being said, my next question to you is, well, what are the energy reduction strategies for water, wastewater processes? And I guess, maybe we'll get into opportunities as well.
Yeah, definitely. So the technology is there for reducing your energy footprint when it comes to water. You have efficient pumping systems. You can have leak detection. We talked about energy capture, smart meters, SCADA systems, your renewable technologies, your anaerobic digesters. So there are a wide range of different strategies you can take. It does vary at what stage of kind of the water supply chain that they apply to. However, there is a host of these technologies and there's opportunities within each of them.
Yeah, because I think if you go, you know, vendors go to a utility, and this is always a challenge. One, you know, you got to overcome the cost and engineering and planning pressures, but also go to them and say, hey, we can deploy more efficient pumping system, or hey, what about leak detection? You've got leakage rates of 17 or 20%. You know, if the focus more is on, you know, even leak detection, so, you know, water goes into the pipe, 20% is lost of any gallon or liter that goes into it. But there's more of a cost to that lost water than just the water itself, or even the value of that water, whether depending on where you are, but seemingly low. Really, there's the cost of energy that goes into it, the emissions related to it. And I know that's a big pressure or discussion we're seeing in the UK, among other things in the UK. And that is about, I don't know, leakage during time of drought, but, you know, the energy and the time and effort and money that's gone into that. So it is pretty significant. I think that really should be the discussion. I think at Bluefield, we're pushing more and more into that direction, because like I said, water is just a collateral or lack thereof, and too much of it is a collateral impact of climate and emissions rather than the cause, right? And the singular problem. So, well, this is interesting. So switching gears a bit, did you see any trends among these plans, at least regionally in the US? How does it break out?
Yeah. So talking about climate change and kind of the contingent or the resulting drought aspect, a trend that really stood out was from Western US. It's all in the news how they have a lack of water currently. So we saw that over a third of the plans, it was about 12 of the 35 plans, were in the West, and California made up 6 of those plans. So it really does show that when climate change is facing an area directly, you're going to be more motivated to take steps to address it. You have no water, it's largely due to climate change. You're like, okay, how can we mitigate climate change? It makes sense. And then it also, just the trend of California setting like standards for progressive management. We see this in many different avenues. Recently with their electric vehicle ruling about new vehicles needing to be electric by, I think it's 2035. So they are that trendsetter kind of the US in this progressive management.
And I think, you know, back to my earlier comment, I think it was actually before you jumped on, and that is about, you know, our recent research on capital improvement plans and things like that. So that's a good example, just even at the municipal utility level, it's themselves. And, you know, electric vehicle rule passes in California by 2035. Well, municipal utilities are going to be using electric vehicles too, right? So there are capital expenditures that are going towards everything from fleet management for these utilities, you know, whether it be for meter readers, et cetera, to, you know, more efficient pumps. And your point about things like energy capture as well will be interesting. So continuing on the trend of geographies and differentiators, what else are we seeing in other countries? Like, let's not just talk about the U.S. What have you seen farther afield?
Yeah, so as we look globally, water utilities in other countries are committing to net zero. So there's that Race to Zero initiative that many people have come across. It's, I think, for the UK, Australia, New Zealand, there's about 26 water utilities that are committing to net zero. I think the timeline ranges from 2025 to 2050. There's a lot of water utilities around the world taking initiative, taking climate seriously. They realize that water does contribute to emissions. And then in Europe, recently, there was a proposal for a new ruling where wastewater treatment plants, so the sector as a whole, to be energy neutral by 2040. So we'll keep an eye on that ruling or the proposal, see how that plays out, but that would be huge in wastewater treatment emissions.
Yeah, like, you know, and back to the conversations, one is it's going to require a different approach at the municipal and utility level, but also at the vendor level, right? So identifying those opportunities. So as we start to wrap things up, Amber, what did we miss? Anything we overlooked in my questions?
I just think a key thing to keep in mind is that these plans are forward-looking. They're setting goals, they're outlining strategies. So it will be interesting to see what's actually going to come of them. Are they going to make this plan, spend some money, put some resources towards it, and then nothing ever happens? Or are they actually going to get the budget for the mitigation strategies? They're going to implement programs. Will they meet their targets? A recent study did find that many cities are lagging on reaching their emissions. It did state about 2/3 of the cities are currently behind. So it'll definitely be interesting to keep an eye on this in the coming years and see what happens.
Nice. All right. Well, this has all been super helpful. I'm not going to lie. I've read the report that you put out. So I know a little bit about this, but I think it's really interesting for others to hear about it, particularly as others, you know, come to us looking for these sort of insights. Well, before I let you go, though, what else are you working on these days?
Yeah, so a little bit more on the industrial side, looking at corporate sustainability. We have a report coming out where we look across 11 different verticals to see their targets for water reduction and to see kind of what they're doing there.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because it also ties into other research you've done on things like data centers, food and beverage, semiconductors, not only looking at their targets and goals, but also even looking at the ground, on the ground level, about what they're doing, whether it be everything from rainwater capture to on-site reuse, targeting cooling efficiencies at their facilities, et cetera, et cetera. So really interesting. So with that being said, why don't we call it quits on this one? But thanks for the time. Thanks for getting up a little bit earlier. And we will talk soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Take care. All right. There you have it. That was super interesting, hopefully for everybody else. But before we sign off, if you're in Boston, let us know and we can set up a meeting at our aging location. It's no longer new. We've been here 3 months now. So I know we got a client coming in next week. Had one last week. So the list of visitors is growing. So take the opportunity. We're only 10 minutes from the airport and train right downtown. surrounded by plenty of hotels, good restaurants, and we're here, more importantly. Please subscribe to Future Water Podcast and give us a review. That's what we need to help you. And if you have any topic ideas, send us a note to waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic ideas you'd like us to discuss. This is, like I said, we're doing this for you. And lastly, tell a friend about it. With that being said, this podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Take care, be well, and be safe.